Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the latest target of Trump's personal and public attacks. This time it is Mitch McConnell in the crosshairs, the majority leader of the Senate, who is a member of Trump's party and a vital ally in moving the president's agenda forward. A 21-year veteran of the United States Senate, Jim Manley, who served as a senior advisor to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and 12 years as an aide to the late Senator Ted Kennedy, joins us. We'll discuss the fratricide going on inside the Republican Party and this unprecedented public put-down in response to the Majority Leader's mild criticism of Trump, and whether Trump's biggest billionaire donor, Robert Mercer, who is putting up $300 million to defeat Republican Senator Jeff Flake because he criticized Trump, will go after McConnell and other Republican lawmakers who annoy Trump. Then, with today's extraordinary put-down of Secretary of State Tillerson by the hawkish alt-right deputy assistant to President Trump, Sebastian Gorka, who belittled Tillerson's diplomatic efforts to calm the situation with North Korea, we will speak with Lily Beyer, a freelance journalist who writes for Politico and other publications, and profiles Sebastian Gorka for The Forward. She joins us from Budapest, Hungary, to discuss the letter by 55 members of Congress asking Trump to fire Gorka and his ties to far-right and neo-Nazi Hungarian political parties and the anti-Semitic Bitezi Rend group whose medal Gorka wore to Trump's inaugural ball. Then finally, we will speak with Taran Singh Brar, a documentary filmmaker and political activist who erected a giant inflated chicken bearing a striking resemblance to Donald Trump near the White House yesterday. He joins us to discuss why he thinks Donald Trump is too chicken to release his tax returns while he plays chicken with North Korea, and how visitors to the mall in the nation's capital reacted to Chicken Don. And joining us now is Jim Manley, who's a senior director at Quinn Gillespie & Associates Public Affairs in Washington, D.C., a 21-year veteran of the United States Senate. He served as senior advisor to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid for the past 6 years, and before that served 12 years as an aide to the late Senator Ted Kennedy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jim Manley.
Thanks again, Ian.
And Jim, you obviously know the Senate well. You spent an awful lot of time there. It is a august place with all its rules and traditions. But I have never witnessed, and I'd like to get an historical perspective on you, has any sitting president ever attacked the majority leader of the Senate, who is also a member of his own party, in such a public and aggressive and humiliating way as Donald Trump has in these last few days attacking Mitch McConnell?
Absolutely not. There is absolutely zero precedence for what we're seeing right now when it comes to these two. And to be clear, it's not only the president attacking the Senate Majority Leader, through which what's left of his legislative agenda has to go through, but it's also the president's, probably more galling, is the president's staff in the persona of one Dan Scavino attacking the Majority Leader as well. Again, this is totally unprecedented territory. You and I have been talking throughout this man's term so far. We are constantly going back to the fact we've never seen anything like it. All of this is everything he does is unprecedented, but this one really takes the cake. Again, to emphasize, the key to him getting anything done during his tenure is not the House, it's the Senate, given the rules of the Senate. For him to be attacking McConnell like this is just absolutely amazing. Now, the good news is that, knowing Senator McConnell, for better or for worse, like I do, I don't think he's going to be easily rattled by this and or, quite frankly, really care what the president has to say, as long as they're, you know, the agenda is the same thing, that is, they're working for tax cuts, et cetera. Tax cuts for the wealthy and for corporations. But if they begin to diverge, and if McConnell's caucus begins to turn against the president, which may or may not happen, then this could this relationship could be very problematic. But again, for right now, quite frankly, you know, Senator McConnell could care less. His only goal is to, like I said, get tax cuts for the wealthiest individuals and corporations in this country, for instance.
But this all began when Mitch McConnell, back home from on vacation or on the August break in Kentucky, suggested that Trump's lack of political experience had led to, quote, excessive expectations for passing major legislation. And that's not exactly a strong attack. But Trump has this absolutely, paper-thin, wafer-thin skin, where he just goes off the deep end, and he's like...
Well, yeah, as a reminder, Ian, he is sending these tweets from his golf course up in New Jersey. Yesterday, or this morning's, I think, was, hey, Mitch, get back to work, get this job done. Again, sending it while he's on vacation. Of course, he denies he's playing golf, yet photos keep on popping up on Instagram of him on the golf course. And just moments ago, the president attacked McConnell again, telling reporters that, in some form or fashion, I'm not going to comment on McConnell right now, but if he doesn't get tax cuts or infrastructure done, ask me that question again, which, again, is not exactly a vote of confidence by the president in Senator McConnell. But, again, to be perfectly clear, Senator McConnell has the overwhelming majority of support within his caucus. He's not going anywhere anytime soon. And as you and I have talked about before, the fact of the matter is more and more Republican senators really could care less about what this president has to say. But, again, for right now, they're on the same page. They want to try and still repeal Obamacare. They want to try and pass tax cuts. They want to privatize efforts to provide infrastructure to this country. So for right now, they're going to be working on the same page. But as the president's approval rating, continues to stick at 36%, no one's going to feel the need to go out on a limb to defend this guy.
Well, specifically, Trump tweeted out today, "Can you believe that Mitch McConnell, who has screamed repeal and replace for 7 years, couldn't get it done? Must repeal and replace Obamacare." And then a few hours later, he tweeted again, "Mitch, get back to work and put repeal and replace, tax reform and cuts, and the great infrastructure bill on my desk for signing. You can do it." And then, as you mentioned, at the end of a briefing, he said that when asked about whether he thought McConnell should resign, he told reporters that if McConnell can't convince Republican senators to repeal and replace Obamacare, then it's time to consider stepping aside. Asked whether he should resign, Trump said to wait and see if he can get repeal and replace done, then ask me. So, not exactly.
Well, a couple different things. First of all, he's not going to get repeal and replace done. That's done. Senate Republicans have made it crystal clear they have no intention of going back to that debate. The only thing they're interested in trying to do right now is, try and figure out some modest ways to try and fix the program. But again, I mean, I hate to give the president any credit, but the fact of the matter is McConnell and the rest of the Republicans did spend the last 7 months, or 7 years, pledging to repeal and replace Obamacare, and they failed spectacularly. Now, they failed because of Senator McConnell's strategy, which again defied the customs and norms of the Senate as he tried to abuse the process to try and get this bill done. But the fact of the matter is the president was either A, absent through most of the debate, and B, when he weighed in, he was usually not helpful to the process, sending different signals from what was happening on Capitol Hill. I mean, these guys have a real problem. If the natural extension of what Trump is saying is that he's going to take over more and more the day-in, day-out handling of Capitol Hill, on Capitol Hill, Republicans to try and get such things as tax cuts done. I mean, that's a recipe for failure. This guy and his team, I've never seen anything like it. They still think that they're playing in the New York City real estate-type rules. They fail to understand the differences between the House and the Senate. They fail to understand, the need to court Republicans. If the president gets more involved in the process, as some have suggested, that's just going to be a recipe for failure.
But how do you think this affects the fact that McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao, is the Secretary of Transportation and she's in the cabinet? I don't remember what she said when they did that bizarre North Korean-style round-robin around the table where everybody had to sycophantically praise the great leader. but clearly she's got to be a little uncomfortable, hasn't she?
I assume so. That's a really interesting issue that came up recently when I was talking to a Democratic senator who shall remain nameless. That really was the underreported aspect of the story. You know, did he do that to try and Trump nominate her to try and make sure that McConnell would stay on the reservation? I think it's fair to ask. Having said that, you know, I don't claim to know, you know, what she's going to do, but I'm more than willing to say that I was a little uncomfortable at the time of her confirmation, given the Trump circumstances, and now even more so. But again, McConnell's going to do what McConnell's going to do, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Well, but already it looks as though the Robert Mercer, this hedge fund billionaire who was the biggest donor to Donald Trump, rescued his presidential campaign, brought in Bannon and Kellyanne Conway, and most of all Cambridge Analytica, the company that he owns, to do data mining on social media, which is very effective, while Hillary was spending tons of money on old-fashioned TV advertising. So he's a big player, you know, no need to...
Well, this is all the same guy who's pledged to run $300 million in ads against Senator Flake.
Right, exactly.
Again, there's a huge amount of Republican-on-Republican violence going on right now, the likes of which I've never seen. There is Senator Ron Johnson attacking his colleague Senator McCain. There's Mercer running these ads against Senator Flake. There's these attacks on Senator McConnell. There's these guys have a real problem handling even the basics of governing right now, and it's only going to get worse in the fall when Congress is going to debate not only whether and how to fund the government, but also how to deal with the debt limit as well. So, you know, Trump is pulling apart the party at the seams. It's leading to all sorts of internecine warfare. And the real question is how all of this is going to affect how a Republican-led Congress, I should say, handles basic issues relating to government spending and the debt limit in the fall. There's a part of me that says that, Senator McConnell and Speaker Ryan are going to have to engage in some shutdown shenanigans in order to try and throw some red meat to the base, you know, because they're all, really out of step with them right now because they haven't been able to deliver on all their promises. We'll see what happens in the fall because, of course, if they do this, it's going to endanger the full faith and credit of the United States government. So, but, you know, I can't rule it out either because, again, there is nothing short of a civil war going on in the Republican Party right now. There's a debate going on in the Democratic Party as well. To be perfectly clear, I'm not going to sit here and deny that that's not the case, but it pales in comparison to what's going on with the Republicans right now. And it's all because, you know, Donald Trump is only simply out for himself.
Well, the possibility of a debt ceiling shutdown, and they've already tried it three times, the Tea Party caucus or the Freedom Caucus. Now they're one of their top guys, Mick Mulvaney, is the budget director in the White House. I think he's very much on the same page as Trump. Trump's also a bomb thrower as well. And Bannon, of course, is all about deconstructing the administrative state. Well, if you want to deconstruct the United States, you're going to take away the United States' greatest strength and advantage on the global stage, and that is that the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency. If they screw with that by a government shutdown in early October, then I have to conclude that Donald Trump is the Manchurian candidate, that he's working for America's enemies. Why would you want to weaken America?
I couldn't agree with you more. And following to that to its logical conclusion, if you engage in such shutdown shenanigans, all you're doing is harming the 401ks and the pension plans of all of Trump's supporters. But apparently they don't care because, like you said, they want to deconstruct the state and rip apart this government. Now, the good news is that Mick Mulvaney is all talk, no cattle. He is, I can assure you, is going to be run over with a Mack truck if and when he's tries to get in the middle of what, you know, McConnell and Speaker Ryan are trying to negotiate. But, you know, he's going to talk a lot, no doubt about it. But I'm not convinced he's going to be. And, yes, I'm well aware of his past actions and his involvement in previous efforts to shut down the government. But I've got a lot of concerns right now. Him trying to muck things up, I'm not so sure, is on the top 10 list.
Well, you also mentioned, in terms of Republican fratricide, the remarks by Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, where it was not so subtle. He more or less said that the reason that McCain torpedoed the final attempt at repeal and replace by the Republican Senate was because of a brain tumor.
I mean, again, you, sorry to interrupt, but you said earlier you described the Senate as an august body, customs and traditions, all of which is the case, but the fact of the matter is it's beginning to show fractures and stress based on the pressures coming from this president, who's wildly unpredictable, and it's becoming more and more like the House. Again, as someone who spent 21 years in the Senate, I've never seen anything like it. And for now, to be clear, Johnson's got a lot of anger issues. Senator Johnson's got a lot of anger issues because Senator McConnell really wasn't. He didn't get very much support from McConnell during his last election. In fact, McConnell tried to shove him aside. So he's got some anger issues he's going to have to continue to try and deal with. But that was an unprecedented attack, and he quickly realized the error of his ways, and he tried to walk it back within the last couple hours. But again, the very idea that you say something like that is just amazing to me. And for me, I always make the joke that, you know, that's something that a House guy would say. And I can assure you, I don't make that I don't mean that as a compliment. So it's just, again, another indication of the body politic breaking down and the war that's going on within the Republican Party.
Well, I am assuming that referring to a senator as behaving like somebody in the House is probably one of the greatest insults that you could level in that body, right?
It sure is. Absolutely.
So let me ask you, though. You mentioned that in spite of the Republican fratricide and the coming apart at the seams, the party, that the Democrats aren't in great shape. Of course, there's a tremendous battle going on here in the state of California.
Yep.
And if that battle in the state of California spreads nationwide, then the Democratic Party, in a moment when it has a great opportunity based upon the fact that President Trump is the most dangerous, reckless, and damaging president in the history of the United States, if you can't take advantage of that situation and come up with an alternative narrative, then, you know, that's...
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, Ian. Having said that, to be clear, I'm not here to make any bold pronouncements yet. I'm still trying to work through, you know, I hate to say it, but I'm still trying to work through what happened in the last election, probably more importantly, trying to figure out, you know, how we as a party can unite to try and address some of the concerns that people are feeling. I sure hope we don't go down the path of... a vicious battle. I think a debate is going to be healthy. The debate that's happened so far is healthy, and a debate in the future, again, I feel is healthy, but you're absolutely correct. Given, as far as I'm concerned, given the clear and present danger that Donald Trump and his administration pose to this country and the values, you know, we hold very deeply, I just hope that we as a party don't lose sight of that and engage in just, a debate that's not going to lead anywhere. But like I said, I'm still trying to work through the issues myself. So,
well, there is a psychological fact or tendency, I don't know how to describe it, but in politics it does seem that Democrats are really more angry at Democrats who are slightly to the right of them than they are at the Republicans who are way to the right of them.
Oh, yeah.
And it also works on the Republican side, where they refer to people that they think are too weak or too far to the left of them as rhinos, Republicans
yep.
in name only. So that's a real phenomenon, which, frankly, I don't understand.
Purity tests, they're difficult. You defer or you move slightly off kilter and you're accused of abandoning the base. Now, some of these issues are important. I understand that. But, you know, I'm not so what, sure what I can say. I mean, I worked for a guy for 13 years in Senator Kennedy at a time when he was back to on top of the legislative process. And for him, compromise was never a dirty word. It was always better to get half a loaf than to get nothing at all. I always thought that was the smart way to go then. I think it's a smart way to go now. But an awful lot of people are demanding, a loyalty and or a purity test that sometimes I find uncomfortable. But, you know, the fact of the matter is the country's changing. We've got to do a better job of listening to the different parts of the base. And again, if only because this president poses a threat to, core values and to, different and diverse parts of this country that are, really feeling the effects of this guy being elected in office. I mean, what's going on in his immigration policy, for instance, it is just absolutely disgraceful. It gets lost in, the comments about North Korea and everything else, but the fact of the matter is Jeff Sessions is there for, I was going to say for better or for worse, but that's not right, for worse. And he's executing his policies when it comes to immigration, which is why, by the way, I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon, because once the spotlight's off him, he is just executing the strategy that includes going after the immigrant community in this country.
Well, just in closing, the Democrats have to get their act together, because if they want to take back the House, for example, here in California, you got 8 vulnerable Republican seats. But if they're fighting amongst themselves over the state party leadership, then that's going to distract from that. But the biggest task would be taking back the Senate. And there's an awful lot of vulnerable Democrats up this year, much more so than Republicans in states that Trump won. So they got their work cut out.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. There's been a series of polls in recent days that show diminution of enthusiasm for Trump by certain parts of his base, which obviously, if that continues through next year, is going to help us. The fact of the matter is that, yes, while the math is strongly against Democrats, the fact of the matter is that all of those up for re-election are handling things very well right now. None are expressing any concern of taking on Trump if they need to. So, I got to tell you, knock on wood, if you will, but I started this year, pretty depressed about the Senate like that. But I think we're in a pretty decent shape right now, especially as a president whose, disapproval number is only going up and up.
Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it, Jim Manley.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Jim Manley, who's a senior director at Quinn Gillespie and Associates Public Affairs in Washington, D.C., a 21-year veteran of the U.S. Senate. He served as a senior advisor to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid for the past 6 years, and before that served 12 years as an aide to the late Senator Ted Kennedy. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back discussing the extraordinary put-down of Secretary of State Tillerson by the hawkish alt-right deputy assistant to President Trump, Sebastian Gorka. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now from Budapest, Hungary, is Lily Beyer, who's a freelance journalist who writes for Politico and other publications, and profiled Sebastian Gorka for The Forward. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lily Beyer.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us. And today, Sebastian Gorka was on the BBC, and we'll play a clip of what he had to say. in a moment, but it was pretty stunning. I mean, we've seen our president attack his own attorney general. He's attacking now the leader of the Senate, who's a member of his own party. But Gawker, of course, is a senior White House aide, a special assistant to, officially called a deputy assistant to President Trump. And he attacked Tillerson and more or less said he was irrelevant to the situation in North Korea, and that merely threatening the United States is an act of war. So it's extraordinary, the belligerence of this statement, which we'll play in a moment. But I'd be interested, since you're in Hungary and you've studied him and you wrote a profile on him for The Forward, what is this man's political DNA? Because so many people have told me, both scholars and journalists, that Gawker is, for all intents and purposes, a Hungarian fascist.
I would not go that far, but what I would say is that Gawker is a fascinating character with a very long history of flirting with far-right ideas and far-right groups, both in the U.S. and in Hungary. So what's really fascinating about Gawker as an individual is that the U.S. government, the White House, is actually the third sovereign state to hire him. He worked for the British military as a young man. After the fall of communism, he went to Hungary and worked for the Ministry of Defense there. He started a political party in Hungary about a decade ago, together with former members of the far-right Jobbik Party, a party that is known for its racism and anti-Semitism. And later, he reinvented himself as an American and as American pundit, expert, and White House official.
Well, he also worked for the FBI and gave lectures to them during the 2016 campaign, but the FBI fired him for his anti-Muslim rants.
That's right. And this is a pattern we see over and over again with Gawker. He doesn't shy away with publicly using rhetoric and imagery that is xenophobic in character. And he doesn't shy away from defending ideas that are quite on the fringes of the political spectrum, whether it be in Hungary or in the United States. So, for example, a decade ago, he went on Hungarian television and essentially defended the formation of a far-right paramilitary group. He has also defended the use of symbols that are very closely associated with Hungary's fascist World War II regime, symbols that are incredibly frightening to minorities, whether it be Jews or Roma living in Hungary, as well as a lot of just mainstream Hungarians that don't want to be associated with the country's dark past. So he does have this history, and for him, whether it be out of ideology or political expediency, it's not a problem to go that far right and to flirt with these symbols and this kind of xenophobia.
Well, he was on Breitbart's Daily News on Wednesday defending, of all people, white supremacists and white men, saying that in the context of a discussion about lone wolf terrorists, and Timothy McVeigh was brought up, because he was dismissing the idea that there are lone wolves, that it's all Al-Qaeda and Muslims and ISIS, etc. And then Gawker on Wednesday lashed out at the New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman, saying she's gotten into a conniption, saying that, oh, it's the white man, it's the white supremacist, that's the problem. No, it isn't, Maggie Haberman. And so then he goes on to an Islamophobic rant. So the amazing thing about this fellow is that Donald Trump just loves him. He can't get enough of him. Donald Trump grades all of his people that work for him based upon how they perform on television. And at this point, Gawker is the rising star. Trump runs around the White House saying, "Did you see Gawker? Did you see Gawker? Wasn't he great? Wasn't he great?" And I'm told that he actually, this fire and fury comment that Trump made about North Korea, which has scared a lot of people, that came from Gawker.
Right. And what's very important to remember is that there have been multiple reports that Gawker actually doesn't hold a security clearance. So his main role in the White House really is to just go on television and to present these ideas and to appeal to the far right fringe of Trump's electorate, and to, of course, please the president himself. He is not allowed, it appears, to be a part of the decision-making process because he has such a complicated past. He worked for the Brits. He worked for the Hungarians. He knew personally individuals who were members of far-right groups. And as a result, his credibility in the eyes of security professionals is not where it should be for a regular White House official that, in theory, is dealing with national security issues.
So let's talk about the profile that you did on him for The Forward. And apparently, a lot of what you brought to the table, he's never really been confronted with, as far as I can tell. But what's really important is that in May of 2017, of this year, a group of 55 congresspeople wrote a letter to President Donald Trump saying, based on recent revelations about Mr. Gorka's public support for and membership in several anti-Semitic and racist groups in Hungary, he is clearly unfit to serve in any position of responsibility in your administration. And of course, Trump totally ignored this. So my understanding is that a lot of these congressmen were writing into President Trump based upon the work that you'd done for The Forward.
That's right. So at The Forward, we actually did a series of investigative reports on Gorka's past. One or two of them had to do with his membership in what's called the Vitézi-Rend. It's an order that was founded by Hungary's World War II-era fascist dictator, Horthy. The order survived after the war and continued to take on members continued to promote a kind of far-right nationalist ideology. Now, Gorka's father became a member after the war, and we believe that Gorka himself is also an initiated member of this group. And beyond that, we also found video footage, as I mentioned a bit earlier, of Gorka defending the establishment of a far-right paramilitary group that was actually later banned in Hungary. The Hungarian Supreme Court upheld the ban, saying that this particular paramilitary group was a threat to minorities. Now, Gorka was not a member of that group, but he did defend the symbols that they used and the some of their rhetoric. So I think that the thing about Gorka is that we don't know if he himself is prejudiced or if he himself holds all of these views. But what we do know is that throughout his career, whether it be in Hungary or in the United States, he has associated himself with people who do hold xenophobic views. And he has at times, as he has recently with the white supremacists, defended individuals who hold incredibly xenophobic and racist views. And so whether it be due to his own personal beliefs or political expediency, that's something we cannot answer. That's something only Gorka can. But what we do know is that time and time again, in different countries, in different contexts, he goes on TV and he defends individuals that usually mainstream political parties would never associate themselves with.
Lily, let's go to the clip of Sebastian Gorka speaking today on the BBC, where he put down Secretary of State Tillerson in a way that was pretty extraordinary and, frankly, blatantly insubordinate, and I don't expect he's going to get fired, and made some extremely bellicose remarks. Let's go to it now.
Sebastian Gorka is Deputy Assistant to the President on the line to Washington. I asked him what the red line was that the North Koreans could not cross.
You should listen to the President. The idea that Secretary Tillerson is going to discuss military matters is simply nonsensical. It is the job of Secretary Mattis, as Secretary of Defense, to talk about the military options. And he has done so unequivocally today. He said, woe betide anyone who militarily challenges the United States, and that is his portfolio, that is his mandate. Secretary Tillerson is the chief diplomat of the United States, and it is his portfolio to handle those issues.
But are you telling me, though, Mr. Gorka, that if there is an action by North Korea that is felt by the United States to be threatening, then that is war? Is that the understanding that the North Koreans should have?
If you threaten a nation, then what should you expect? A stiffly worded letter to be sent by courier? Is that what the UK would do if a nation threatened a nuclear-tipped missile launched against any of the United Kingdom's territories?
But it's one thing to launch it. It's another thing to threaten it, particularly when the threats come from North Korea. And I suppose that the thing that concerns people and the thing that ought to be clear to the North Koreans is, are we talking here about an attack on the United States that would obviously meet a huge response, or are we talking simply about the threat of it?
We will not telegraph in advance what we will or will not do. We have sent a very clear message. Do not challenge the United States, because you will pay a cost if you do so. Any other details are classified and will remain so.
But having sent that message, as you say, that clear message, if you don't act on it, you are going to look very weak indeed, aren't you?
In the last 6 months, do we look like an administration that doesn't act? After 8 years of leading from behind, creating vacuums around the world that were filled by evil actors from ISIS to God knows who, the fact is this administration has been decisive from day one. Whether it was a 21,000-pound bomb dropped on ISIS or 59 cruise missiles launched against Syria when they used chemical weapons against unarmed women and children, I don't think you have to worry about our decisiveness.
Sebastian Gorka.
And that was a clip of Sebastian Gorka speaking today on the BBC. So, Lily Beyer, again, you're in Budapest, Hungary. You've studied this man and his political DNA. The far right-wing group, Vitezi Rend, that you mentioned, that he said he wasn't. Gorka says he wasn't a member, but they say that he was a member, right? And he did wear Vitezi Rend medal to Trump's inaugural ball. Now, he said that that was his father's medal. I think his father was given that in the 70s when he was living in London. But it is an organization that was anti-Semitic. No Jews could join it, even if they were war heroes from World War One. It's a pretty clearly far-right wing, I don't know, I won't use the word fascist because some people think that's over the top. But what did you make of his defense that I was honoring my father, not
right.
what this group stands for?
Right. So Gorka's defense was that he is honoring his father. And then as the controversy evolved, his response shifted a bit from saying, oh, I'm just honoring my father, to actually defending the organization, to saying Gorka and some of his defenders were saying that there were members of the Vitezi Rend who saved Jews during the war and who were not anti-Semites. And part of that may be true, but as an organization, the Vitezi Rend was founded in partially as a racial organization, one that referred to the purity of the Hungarian race in some of its founding documents. So whether or not some of its later members espouse that ideology or not, well, we don't know their personal views, but as an organization, they do have that original identity. Another thing to point out is that members of the Vitezi Rend tend to put a little V in their name, between their first name and their last name, I believe. And a lot of Gorka's publications up until a few years ago actually included that V in his name. So he actually signed his own name, including in one testimony, I believe, to the House Armed Services Committee around 2011, using that V for Vitez, a member of the Vitezi Rend. So he self-identified as a member.
So, first of all, I've tried to cover what's going on in Hungary and to a lesser extent in Poland, where their right-wing governments are rolling back the clock and rolling back democracy. But the Hungarians have stolen a march. They've basically, Orbán is basically controls the judiciary and the government entirely, and more importantly, the media. And I talked the other day with Jan Kubik, a scholar of Hungary and also mostly of Poland, who spends a lot of time in Hungary, and he said, you know, it's worked. The right wing, it's a right wing takeover. It's gone back to kind of the Stalinist years of mind control. That can't believe what goes on in the media. It's kind of like Fox News on steroids. And we're certainly heading that way in this country if Fox and Sinclair are able to get more powerful and keep pumping out pro-Trump propaganda. But the most disturbing thing he told me was that he said all of his liberal friends, people that have involved with the university that George Soros funded that Orban has closed down or is closing down, he said they're afraid to speak up now. So you're there. Has it already happened? Have the liberals, the opposition, sort of lost heart and been cowed?
I would not say that they've completely lost heart, but it is true that a lot of people here do fear speaking up. So the government has tried to crack down on the Central European University. That battle is still ongoing. The vast majority of the media, including 100% of regional publications, are in the hands of the ruling party. State media is very much towing the government's line in terms of propaganda against migrants and refugees and individuals like George Soros. The good news for the United States is that in the U.S., I think, institutions are a lot stronger than here. What happened in Hungary, and perhaps what's also happening in Poland, is that a lot of the gains that were made in the early years of the transition to democracy in the 90s are being reversed. And unfortunately, the institutions are not strong enough to withstand the pressure.
Well, Lily Beyer, I thank you very much for joining us from Budapest to Hungary. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Lily Beyer, who is in Budapest, Hungary. She's a freelance journalist who writes for Politico and other publications and profiles Sebastian Gorka for The Forward. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back speaking with the documentary filmmaker and political activist who erected a giant inflated chicken bearing a striking resemblance to Donald Trump near the White House yesterday. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Taran Singh Brar, who is a documentary filmmaker and political activist who is based in Orange County, California. He has erected a giant inflatable chicken bearing a distinct resemblance to President Donald Trump near the White House in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Background Briefing, Taran Singh Brar.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And the chicken, of course, is getting a lot of attention. Are you there by the chicken at the moment?
Currently, the chicken is not up. It was the permit was for yesterday, so now he's all deflated in the back of my U-Haul.
I see. So tell me about how you got the permit and how you got the chicken and just walk us through what happened yesterday.
Sure. So yesterday was a culmination of about 4 months of planning. I had the idea in March while I was organizing Tax Mart Chicago, and I ordered the chickens from there. But it was designed by an American artist and produced in China. And so I ordered a 30-foot version, and I had it in Chicago. I shipped it to D.C. with the idea of inflating it outside the White House. And I studied the camera angles on those broadcast feeds. And I felt like there was a pretty good chance at 30 feet, the chicken would pop up into the newscast. And luckily, I was right.
Well, it is. Of course, we're radio. I wish we were television for this story. It's huge. Huge. And it has this kind of orange golden coif and a kind of stern look, that sort of Mussolini look that Donald Trump likes to project.
For sure.
So how was it greeted by bystanders there in the nation capital?
Oh, mostly very joyous. I mean, I saw people in Trump shirts taking photos in front of it in a happy way. So I would say 95 to 98% of the reaction was a lot of joy. It's a pretty cute image.
Right. And just in terms of dissent, though, was anybody upset about it?
I could count on one hand how many people have been upset, like verbally said things to me that are kind of nasty. It's just on a small number of people over weeks of inflating these in different areas. And yesterday, one person said, shame on you, this is disrespectful. And, you know, I politely listened and didn't say anything back. But in my mind, that rolled off my shoulders because respect is earned, not given. And Donald Trump launched his political career saying President Obama was born in Kenya with his birth certificate. And then he came down his stairs to launch his presidential campaign and said Mexicans are racist. So I'm not really worried. I mean, he doesn't really deserve respect.
Well, he is certainly somebody that hasn't shown a lot of respect, even for his people closest to him. He's been beating up on his own attorney general and humiliating him in public. And now, of course, he's beating up on the head of the Senate, who is a member of his own party, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
So I guess if there is clearly he has a very thin skin. And apparently Alec Baldwin bothers him immensely with his parodies on Saturday Night Live. So any feedback on whether Trump knows about this? I mean, I don't imagine.
I can't imagine he doesn't know with how much it's penetrated the media atmosphere at this point.
Well,
I haven't gotten a call from anyone in the administration yet.
Well, you know, he gets this daily brief from his sort of sycophantic aides telling him how great he is, you know. And if they can't find any real stories about how great he is, Trump himself tweets out fake news about himself from Russian bots and fake people. So it's a very surreal situation.
The madman.
So tell me then about how you got hold of this chicken. As you mentioned, it's made in China, and that I guess has a certain irony to it to begin with. what you've been saying in press reports about the chicken is that Donald Trump himself is chicken, and he's chicken because he won't release his tax return. So tell us about what political messages accompanying this a very amusing protest of yours.
Yeah, for sure. We're basically saying that in visual form we're representing him as the weak and ineffective leader he is. And the message is that, you know, he's too afraid to release his tax returns, too afraid to stand up to Putin, and now he's playing a game of chicken with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. And it's immensely destabilizing, and yet he wants a military parade in D.C., it's incongruous.
And do you think that there is a way to deal with him through this method of satire? Is it? I mean, to my mind, this might well be his Achilles heel, because there's a real paradox about Trump. On the one hand, he insults people and is disgusting and racist and horrible to not just people, but to whole races of people. But at the same time, he craves affection. And more than anything else, he craves the recognition of Hollywood. I mean, he really does have this craving for celebrity status. And so far, only, you know, C and D list celebrities like Scott Baio have shown up in support of him. But I'm absolutely sure that he craves the recognition of the A list celebrities, if not the entire celebrity culture. So I think his Achilles heel is both that craving for respect and affection, even though he's a very hateful person. But I think he's also really vulnerable to ridicule because he has such an inflated idea of himself. So it seems to me a giant inflated 30-foot-high chicken is a perfect metaphor for his inflated sense of himself.
Yeah, thank you. I think so, too. And we call him Chicken Don. The president is very fond of his campaign insults of Little Marco, Lion Ted, Crooked Hillary. Well, Chicken Don sticks just as well.
And have you heard from anybody from the White House? Has any have the press who covered it? Because I saw a lot of coverage of it, and it's a pretty striking picture, particularly the aerial pictures from the White House. It's sort of halfway between the White House and the National Monument, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And the 4 months of planning went in. I knew the camera angles, the locations of them, the angles involved, and where I could legally, with my permit, inflate the chicken, and I triangulated them. Just perfectly, I guess, luckily, that so it fell direct line into the sights of those cameras.
And has anybody in the press, you know, coverage that you've noticed, got any kind of statement out of the White House? Is this?
No, as far as I'm concerned, I haven't heard anything. I've been pretty busy myself. People have been sending me some periodic updates, but no official communication as far as not personally. They haven't contacted me directly, nor... I mean, I don't know if they would issue a statement on it because it would amplify their weakness. So, I mean, they may be holding back.
Well, are you gonna move the Chicken Don down to Bedminster, New Jersey? I mean,
well, people are encouraging me to do it, but you know, I frankly I've poured so much of my own money into this, a few thousand bucks, that if someone wants to cover the shipping and whatnot and take good care of it, then sure.
Right. Well, I read somewhere that you crowdfunded to get the money to get to Washington. So did you drive all the way from Orange County to Washington? Or, you know, you said you shipped the chicken.
I shipped the chicken from Chicago to D.C. when I was out there, and then I moved back to Orange County, and I've flown to D.C. three times in the months of planning this operation. And, it's taken I raised the funds for the initial purchase on GoFundMe for TaxSmart Chicago back in April, March. And since then, I really just raised a paltry amount on my GoFundMe, basically nothing. So a lot of this has just been coming out of pocket. But knowing the potency of what we're dealing with, I had faith in it and just kind of kept going.
How did you work with the – it's the National Park Service, right, that gave you the permit?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So,
the National Park Service, yeah.
Yeah, so
I went into their permits office on 900 Ohio Drive Southwest in D.C. They have a trailer for permits. I walked in, checked the board, started building a relationship with them, did a few inflations over the last few weeks in different areas, built a rapport, and got okay from Parks Police and Secret Service.
And nobody objected in any way? There wasn't any it's overtly political, surely.
Sure. I got a little bit of slow walking from a few people in the bureaucracy, but I was just very persistent and kept showing up. And ultimately, if they slow walk you too much, then they put themselves in legal jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. So what exactly does the law say on your side? This is considered
First Amendment demonstration.
Uh-huh. So this would be like any political group getting a permit to stage a protest. You just happen to be a one-man Chicken Don show.
Yeah, something like that.
And so you get – what happens there? They gave you a really good location, and then you, just blow this thing up with a – how does that happen? How do you erect it?
They gave a whole quarter quadrant of the ellipse to – and based on the triangulations of the camera angles, I knew it had to be placed more in that direction. Otherwise, it'd be blocked by the White House. So they didn't tell me exactly where to go, but they have certain guidelines. Like, you can't block the Vista sightline from the White House South Portico to Jefferson Memorial. So we didn't. We were to the right a little bit, but not too far right where the White House blocked the chicken.
So just in closing then, you're born here in the United States, or did your parents immigrate?
I'm born in Canada.
You're born in Canada.
I was born in Canada, but raised in North America my whole life. I was raised in Orange County from 1 or 2 years old. Mm-hmm. My parents immigrated from India in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Father is a doctor. Mom is a business executive.
And you didn't get any comments about, you know, what's a foreigner doing, making fun of our beloved president?
No, not so much. I mean, like I said, the handful of people over the last few weeks who have given, been upset enough to make some nasty remarks to me have mostly been trying to tell me that Vladimir Putin, you know, it's like, it sounds like talking to someone who reads InfoWars. They're like, yeah, Vladimir Putin, it's all fake news. I'm like, okay.
Right.
So, right. You know. But yeah, this is their beloved guy. But you know what? Like, he's on the side of white supremacy, and a lot of people are not going to stand for that and will fight back in legal and peaceful and nonviolent ways.
And what do you think it's going to take to get his tax returns released? Because he really did get away with that. He's gotten away with an awful lot by insulting Mexicans and everything else and Muslims.
Yeah,
but on top of that, the idea that he just brazenly refused to give up his tax returns, which most normal, reasonable people should think is a little suspicious. But he toughed it out, and nobody seemed to be able to do it. Maybe this guy, Mueller, the special prosecutor, already has the tax returns. There's a,
I think so,
a rumor that that's why Trump flipped out and attacked Sessions recently, because his lawyers told him that Mueller probably already had his tax returns. So he's clearly worried about them being released to the public. I don't think that's much of a stretch. So I guess that's, at the end of the day, you're just trying to pile on a little pressure there in that regard.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. I mean, he needs to be impeached because the whole world is being held hostage by a madman right now.
Yeah, well, then where's the movement that you're leading? Because I tend to agree with you that this is a really unfortunate aberration that the American people have elected not just an unqualified, ignorant, horrible man, but they've also elected a very dangerous, narcissistic sociopath.
Yeah, I know. It's really irresponsible of the American people to do this. And I like those hats that say, don't blame me, I voted for Hillary, because that's how I feel. I voted for Hillary. Campaigned strongly for
her. Right. But this is not really about him versus her. This is about him being who he is. I mean, she.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Many people think
he's a unique threat.
Yeah.
He's not a normal.
Right. I mean, a lot of people are mad at her for allowing this thing to happen. I'm sure she has pretty sleepless nights thinking about how she blew it. But so it's not really about her anymore. It's about him and the fact that he's got the nuclear codes.
That's exactly right. I mean, I don't see the U.S. military vetoing his launch orders, so it's very scary.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a cheery note to end on.
Well, that's why the chicken brings joy in all this stress, and that's why I'm so grateful for it.
All right. Well, I hope to see it soon. You know, maybe some listeners will send you some money to take it down to Bedminster.
Yeah.
Take it down to Bedminster.
If that's the case, they can go to GoFundMe.com/chicken-march.
Right.
And on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, our handle is at Chicken Donnie Boy. Chicken, D-O-N-N-Y, Boy, B-O-Y. Chicken Donnie Boy.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Taran Singh Bro.
Hey, thank you so much.
And again, I've been speaking with Taran Singh Bra, who is a documentary filmmaker and political activist based in Orange County, California. He erected a giant inflatable chicken that bears a distinct resemblance to President Trump near the White House in Washington, D.C. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.